Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively shipping Taharka love to you, Don Moeller. I got big news, not just that Taharka Brothers has become an employee-owned company this week. We broke that story with Sean and Steve. But they are going to be shipping this to people. Get this, east of the Mississippi on 1 or 2 day shipping. And there's going to be a WNST thing, and it's going to be $15. Yes, it's true. So it's not just for Baltimore, which we're doing right already.
Look at this, Nestor. Look at this. I just got my text. My case is on the way. My Taharka is coming today. Comes in that box, baby.
Well, you know, I'm just going to say this, that here's the box, and it comes with all the love in the 8-pack, usually $56, $15.70 off, just over $40. And if you're shipping it across the country, I'm going to give you some more details on that. Our friends at State Fair and our friends at El Guapo, I literally was over with Don delivering the new Strategic Factory swag that we're going to be sporting around here. My cat already loves the tassels on it. I rode by State Fair, I rode by El Guapo, and I'm like, look, it's going to be a little Mexican for the holidays for me. I'm going to go cup some margaritas, going to try some tequila in the name of my brother Julio Bermejo. So we're going to be doing that, but you can curbside. We've heard all this stuff going on in the city and all the counties. Make sure you're supporting our local sponsors, including shipping those crab cakes from Fadley's. Coach Billick shipped 16 of them. I had him on a Zoom the other day. He's like, oh my God, they were incredible. I'm getting them again for Christmas. One click away on Fadley's, and of course through BaltimorePositive.com, and of course Moeller and Gary Realty. Don Moeller's lad, Jeff Moeller, trying to get my condo listed, but I have like all these check marks and things I got to do, honeydews during the holidays. But we're gonna get the house listed next year. And you know, this segment, I'm gonna let you do the honors, because back in the day, if I would have tried to get Max on my show, the BAL people would have probably had, you know, a cow, man, like 20 years ago. Ed Kiernan and Jeff Beauchamp would have never allowed Max on the show. So I'm not sure. Max, have you ever been on any of my programs? It'll be 29 years this weekend that I've been on the radio. Have you and I ever done this publicly?
Nope, not a one. Privately, many times. We've done private radio shows.
I so adore you. Do you know that? So look, here's the first thing. This is the sweet potato crumble, right? And You must play the cello, and if you don't, you have to come back. But, you know, privately, we've been friends through all these years, and I remember, you know, because I was a budding journalist back in the day, and I saw Max, and I'm like, who's this Max guy? You know, like, who's this? And then, obviously, you go on the radio, and then I get to know you, and it's a pleasure to have you on and discuss the city that we all love, because I don't know enough about you.
Wow.
Well,
okay.
Well, let's tell. I mean, yeah, listen. You're gonna have this little love in. I'm just gonna step aside.
Well, I'm gonna eat. I'm eating ice cream. No. I'm discovering this right here. And you guys talk about yourselves.
Let our folks who are listening and watching know that we are with the one, the only Max Weiss, editor in chief of Baltimore Magazine. And Max, as Nestor said, you guys have known each other forever. I was blown away when I see that you've been at this gig for over 2 decades.
Yeah.
How the hell did that happen?
You know, and I didn't even start at Baltimore Magazine. I'd started at City Paper.
I remember. That's where I saw your bylines, man. I was going to the bars reading the City Paper. Yeah. Come on.
I was doing movie reviews. I had a column called Nice Girl, which I always say was blogging before blogging. And then I got my job at Baltimore Magazine. I started as a staff writer. And then I became associate editor. And then I became senior editor, and then I became managing editor, and now I have finally climbed to the top of the masthead, and I am now editor-in-chief.
Well, that was my very first, and we're going to get into your background. New York girl, ends up down I-95 in Baltimore.
I know nothing about this, Max. I'm eating ice cream.
Keep eating.
I feel like I'm at the movies. This is great.
we're going to get into all of that.
This is your life, Max.
My very first question was, Max, for our folks, we try to educate people, and we love this city, and we love the organizations and the businesses making a difference in our city. What in the world does a managing editor do? Pretend you're at career day and one of my grandchildren's school, I say, hey, I'm going to get you someone. I'm going to get Max Weiss, and she's going to come in and tell you what the managing editor does.
I got to correct you, because I got sweet potato crumb.
Editor in chief.
That's right.
She's got the word chief in her title.
Editor
Remember
in
how
chief,
much right. I love that?
Change of magic. Editor in chief.
You can just call me chief, and I'm good chief. With that. Yeah.
No,
chief.
We had Pam Rundon, and we've had Melissa Hyatt on, and they're both chiefs. And chief. I'm like, you know, he was like, he was the county executive, you know?
Right.
Man, you're a chief. I mean, that's
chief.
That's,
so chief,
I love it.
Chief Weiss, what does the editor and chief do at Baltimore Magazine to get this? And we're going to talk a lot about, I love this issue. We're going to talk about it. But what do you do? What does the editor-in-chief do to make all this come together?
Well, I mean, that's the crazy thing about putting out a magazine. It's like every month you have a blank slate. Like all these pages that are filled right now, they start out empty. And if you think of it that way, it's almost a little scary. But, you know, we do stick to what we call a layout, which means that, you know, if you flip through the magazine, you're going to see certain things in a certain order every single month. So you're going to see the letters and the masthead and the table of contents and then the events and the smaller stories and moving on to the features and the dining coverage. So, you know, that gives us a little bit of a roadmap as we get through the month. But, you know, my job is I plan the stories. I assign them to the various editors and writers. Sometimes I edit and write them myself. I read literally every single word in the magazine several times over. But a huge chunk of what I do is planning. We have a storyboard. It used to be in my office in person. Now it's a Google Doc because we're all working from home. And we just start like planning out the year. And people who know Baltimore Magazine, you know that we have certain regular stories that we do every single year. So we're always going to do a Best of Baltimore. We're always going to do a Best Restaurant. We're always going to do a Top Doctors. I will say that in my own, my 25 years now at the magazine, which, you know, I started as a child reporter.
Amazing.
That this is the first year that we've actually mixed some of those things up by necessity because of the pandemic, because of all that's been going on. So for example, Best of Baltimore, which always comes out in August, came out in September.
We were particularly fond of this year's Best
I'm
of Baltimore
sure you guys were.
Edition. We're very fond of that edition.
Yeah, you know, I won the award last century, Max. You know, so it's the first time this century, you know, so I love it. You know, I found the old picture of me in front of Memorial Stadium holding my original Best of back in 1996.
That's
so, yes,
consistency, man. I mean, you know, you're getting it done through the century.
hanging on by
so,
a thread.
So you were talking before I rudely interrupted.
Oh, no.
you were talking about mixing the issues now.
Yes, yes. So for example, Best Restaurant is usually in March. Obviously, with all of this upheaval in the world of restaurants and dining, we felt like we couldn't, you know, one of the tricky things is that we work months in advance, right? So like right now we're working on the February issue. So it's a little bit of a guessing game, like trying to figure out what things are going to look like. But at a certain point, it kind of became clear to us like, man, this pandemic is here for a while. We're stuck like this for the long haul. And we began planning accordingly, but it's extremely difficult to do a lifestyle magazine, which is what Baltimore Magazine essentially is, when there's no lifestyle happening. I mean,
right.
I got shirts in my closet I want to show off. For a week, I wore nice stuff on Zoom just to like, I mean, I got sweatpants on, I'm not lying, but you know, I mean, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
You know?
I knew I was in trouble when one of my grandsons said the other day, he said, Pop, you wear that same sweatshirt an awful lot, you know, and you're going, oh, Lord, that's what it's come to.
No, actually, yesterday I put on a sweater that I used to wear all the time in what I call before times. And
is this like the under 45 degree sweater kind of sort of? Because this
yes,
was the
exactly.
week to do it. You know what I mean?
Yes,
right?
Right. That's exactly right. I put on like a right. warm, toasty sweater, a sweater I used to wear all the time. And it was so itchy. And I thought, why the hell did I wear itchy sweaters? Like it never had occurred to me before that it wasn't a comfy sweater. But now when all day long you're walking around in sweats and the comfiest clothing ever.
I'm 52, baby. Comfort's everything, you know, head to toe, you know, I mean, that's where we're at.
But actually, believe it or not, I actually am somebody who loves clothing, loves fashion in my own way. And yes, I have, like, I haven't worn a blazer in 8 months, which is crazy because I'm a blazer-wearing girl. So it's been frustrating. But just getting back to the magazine, so we're doing something called the Dining Awards in March instead of Best Restaurants, which gives us a little more flexibility. That way we can, you know, commend the restaurants that have sort of pivoted. I hate that word that we're hearing.
So we're all pivoting. Baltimore Positive is a pivot. You pivoted to doing my show. I mean, come on. We were all making changes here, Max.
I'm pivoting as we speak, yes. Can I pivot off the show?
No, keep going.
No, because I'm gonna tell you that you should do Love as your February issue. If you're planning February, I think you should do Love.
Well, it's too late because we're right in the midst of our February issue right now, although there are certain Love-related components to it, let's just say, you know, of course.
You're not doing Presidents, are you? It's February, you know? No, I'm just kidding.
Let's see. Can I tell you? Yeah, I think I can. February issue, we're doing emerging female leaders. That's the big cover story.
Well, I love it. So there you go.
Great topic. Max, mixed into all of this, and we're going to talk about the 50 Reasons issue. I am going to go back. I'm going to talk a little bit about the best restaurant issue, because to me, it's always one of your most popular. But what Nestor and I have been riveted to for months now, And not to, you know, praise you too much and go on and on about it, but I think it is praiseworthy, and that is the particular work that one of your reporters, Ron Cassie, is doing in terms of investigative journalism. I mean, he's doing in-depth pieces that you rarely see in the journalistic world anymore. And I guess my question for you, is that by design of the editor-in-chief to say, we're going to put out the most hard-hitting issues, and whether it's Ron talking about how to fix Baltimore, we probably did an hour with Ron on that and could have done another hour. He's got that great piece this month that will just make people's jaw drop about the easy access to guns and how that impacts our city. So is that editorial decision? Is that you? Is that a group decision? How do you come about?
She works at the city paper. She came from the real side.
Okay. So my feeling with the magazine is that we are a lifestyle magazine. So you know that we're always going to cover the dining scene and the arts and the culture and the retail scene. But we also want to write about the fullness of Baltimore. So we're going to do tons of profiles of people. We're going to do stories on the people, places, and things that we find fascinating. We don't want to sugarcoat what's happening in Baltimore. I mean, I feel very much of two minds, and I feel like the magazine reflects that. On the one hand, I think it's really important to point to people in Baltimore and out of Baltimore and say, this city is great. Like, it is so much more than what you've heard about. There is so much exciting stuff. There are so many wonderful artists and chefs and restaurateurs and musicians.
From the outside. You have my wife is too. And when we drive around and see stuff we've never seen before, we literally made a turn the other day in South Baltimore taking ice cream to Arca, literally to Chris Pica. And we turned on a street we'd never turned onto, and there were like Christmas lights and stuff in the middle of Federal Hill. And we're like, wow, man, Baltimore's awesome.
Yeah.
And when it's seen through the eyes of an outsider, I think it's different than Moeller coming in off of Mount St. Joe and me taking the 23 bus into Highlandtown as a kid. I mean, I didn't know anything else in the 70s growing up. Moeller didn't know anything else in the 50s and 60s growing up. But I think when people come from the outside, they see Baltimore in a completely different light, and especially if they've been to Europe or if they've traveled a little bit. You know what I mean? If you've been to a lot of other places, Baltimore's pretty unique. And I don't know that we really appreciate that on the inside.
Now, although Max, and we all agree with that, and actually it's interesting because number one, In this
they're not
edition,
ranked. They're not ranked.
But I know, but number yeah. numerical one, not yeah, in any order. We keep it real, and I think of that when Nestor talks about turning down that street, and I'm going to have you talk about some of these momentarily. But there was a but coming. You said, I think we wear two hats.
Thank you. So, yes, I do think it's important for us to celebrate Baltimore and everything that makes Baltimore wonderful. And I think a lot about people who maybe are staying in a hotel room who pick up Baltimore Magazine, and I want them to see how wonderful the city is. But we also are a city that is plagued by a lot of ills, and we're not going to bury our heads in the sand. And so we really want to reflect the entirety of the, you know, the diversity of the city in every respect. And also because we're on a monthly deadline, we do have more time to do what we call going behind the headlines, right? So the people who work at the Baltimore Sun, they're covering the stories on a day-to-day basis. What we're able to do with our monthly deadline and with the talent that we have, Ron Cassie being certainly one of the most talented people in the city, is that we're able to give you the context, give you the human side of the story, dig deep into the story. And for me, it's always sort of the human story behind the headlines, behind the numbers that we are able to do. And yes, it's very intentional. I just want the magazine to keep it real, you know, to, as it were. But as far as Ron is concerned, you know, I mean, he is just an extremely enterprising reporter. He's very curious. He's got an encyclopedic knowledge of the city. And, you know, so we're just lucky to have him doing, you know, he's a true journalist in the true sense. Like, he gets fascinated by a subject, whether it's the environment, whether it's, you know, gun trafficking, whether it's sex trafficking. And he just digs in deeply. Back when we were in the office, you'd go into his office and there'd be like books piled up, sort of toppling over, you know, that kind of thing. And, yeah, but it's very much a reflective of the kind of magazine that we want to put out.
Well, Max, I mean, Max, go ahead. Nestor, one quick thing on that topic before we jump back in. Just for people who are listening, to give you an example of what Max is referring to, the very first sentence of Ron Cassie's article, and again, folks, this is in this month's edition, 50 Reasons to Love Baltimore Right Now. It's out there. It's available. Max is going to tell you where to get it. We're going to promote the heck out of it because it's a terrific addition. But in that article, it so captures what Max is saying about the two hats they wear, because you've got this wonderful outline of 50 things that we love and we all recognize them when we read them. And then there's an article about the excess of guns on the city streets. And Ron Cassie begins by saying, the first time someone shot at him, Kevin Sherrod was a tall, skinny 16-year-old. Now, here I am, old guy in the suburbs, and someone paints a picture for me in one simple declarative sentence by saying, the first time someone shot at him. I feel like I'm in a Chris Rock video, right? People ain't supposed to shoot at you. And Ron's saying, the first time. Well, right there, you're hooked. And that's the kind of reporting that you get in Baltimore Magazine. So I thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you. And all of us at the magazine, we love magazine journalism. It's just storytelling. Everything that we do is storytelling. So no matter what the subject is, if you're not telling a story, you're not doing your job right, you know? And, you know, we know that sometimes it can be a little jarring almost to go from a story that's praising the city to one that's delving into the ills of the city. And we've had that issue before in the past where we're like putting things on the cover and it seems like there are all these contradictory things. You know, on the one hand, we're celebrating, then on the other hand, we're talking about crime and violence. But again, that's the full story. That's the full picture of Baltimore. And just Nestor, I will say that I don't feel like an outsider anymore. I mean, I've lived in Baltimore longer than I didn't live in Baltimore.
Yeah, I think you get a card after you've been here for a while, and it's pretty clear you're not angling to get the job at the Atlantic and move to, you know, New York, right? If you make it to like 35 here, and, you know, you come here out of college, I know a lot of people that, you know, they're Ravens people, even if they grew up in Jersey, you know what I mean? Like, and are adults that have adopted everything about this from the Crab on. You know, I was going to ask you this because, like, you came here as a kid. You came from New York through Vermont, and I got to get all of that in here. It's nice we praise the magazine, but I got to learn some Max here. But when you get here, City Paper is doing really weird, esoteric stuff. Like, reviewing albums you couldn't get anywhere. You know what I mean? Like literally, yeah, because I was a music guy and like sort of really weird criminal stuff. And it was stuff like the Sun. It was just way different than the Sun. And I was a reporter, you know. Baltimore Magazine was more along the PR side of being like shining up the city. I don't remember in the 90s, and maybe I'm wrong, Baltimore Magazine ever admitting that there was a problem in the city, right? Part of, you know, all of this was what we problems. We don't have any problems here. Kind of like what the Orioles did for 25 years. So, I would say that the loss of the city paper, the loss of the Sunday Sun and various reporting that's out there has opened this space for, you know, you to be anything you want to be in the modern era. I mean, Baltimore Positive, my radio, any media entity can pivot. But more than that, usurp the bigger part of the story, which is when you got here, there were sort of silos for where you were allowed to have, you know, artsy stories or mainstream stories or stories that the establishment allowed. Or, I think in the modern way, doing it all makes it, like you said, Article One, most important thing, although you didn't say that, keep it real, right? I mean, because part of this is if all you're doing is PR, then I think that shines through. What we're trying to do here is say, we got problems. How can we solve these problems, right? And I think that that comes from love, going back to your February issue. But that comes from loving the city and really wanting it to be better because we're here. You know, we live here. It's our community. It's our neighborhood. These are our friends wanting to lift it up, but pointing out like the murder rate, yeah, that's real, but we need to do something about that. But when every night it leads like that, it's just been such a tragedy over the last 25 years to say Baltimore, as you say, and Baltimore, as I say, or have an Oriole hat or a Raven hat. And the first thing out of somebody's mouth when we were 25 or 30 was Cal Ripken, crab cakes, all those. I went to Baltimore, I had an awesome, I went to Fells Point, I did Camden Yards, whatever it was. Now the first thing I hear is about the bad stuff here. And I think all of us are elbows deep into trying to create a different narrative. And I mean, I really salute everything you're doing on that front, but I think we all had to evolve and admit the issues, right? And you can't turn away from that. No one credible could turn away from the problems we have here.
Yeah. And, you know, you're absolutely right in that when City Paper shuttered, and I was very sad about that because I love the City Paper, you know, we did feel that there was a little bit of a vacuum in the media landscape, and we have tried to fill it to a certain extent. I mean, we're never going to be City Paper. We're not an alternate publication. We're a mainstream publication, you know. But in terms of some of the kinds of things that they were covering, even in the arts, and certainly in terms of the kinds of long form type stories they were doing. Yes, we've tried to pick up some of that slack and we've seen that opening and we've jumped into it again, while never losing sight of the fact that one of our huge missions is to celebrate the city as well. You know, but I honestly think that it almost goes back to that thing about patriotism. To me, a true patriot is somebody who loves their country enough to be willing to criticize it. And I feel that way about Baltimore, you know, that we love Baltimore so much and only want the best for Baltimore. But if you're not willing to be critical of it and see it warts and all, then you're not telling the truth and you're doing a disservice to the residents of Baltimore, you know? So,
well, let me ask you this as friends, because we're all here, you know, having a Royal Farms coffee right now, just hanging out. I put a post up last week, and this is, you know, in the beginning of the awfulness and Brandon coming in, shutting down this is before that. Dear friend of mine, and I, you know, I'll out him because I love him too. Ron Furman. I mean, you know Ron, right? I mean, I've known Ron 30 years over Max's on Broadway. Every time I'm in front of it, evokes the memories of David Cassidy being there and the night that the Rembrandts played and all the power went out and they did a show by candlelight. Like crazy, cool. Right? Yeah. So, I mean, I have these memories. He hits me. He's got a new menu. So I go down, take some food, whatever, curbside, grab it. You know, his daughter's there. It's, you know, I'm looking forward to like elbowing up there a year from now, going, you know, like doing what I do. And I step out, I put a picture up, and the first thing some jack wagon does, and this is sort of an internal a person I've known all my life, writes, "I'm surprised the dirt bike didn't run you over." And I'm thinking to myself, you know, if that's all you got, you ain't got much. But you know that that mentality's out there, right? And you can pull that weed out of the garden, or you can say, we're going to fix it, and you're going to get your ass back down here and get some barbecue and get a beer because you're going to love it too. I don't know where the middle of that is for any of us who are vested, right? I don't know what to do with that. I'm trying to figure that out as to whether that person is ever going to be part of what we talked about, which is the solution, right? The solution we all really want to be for the city.
Right. But, you know, I do think that there is this perception from people who live in the suburbs, maybe in the county, that Baltimore is a much more ominous and scary place. I mean, I live in the city.
I walk around the city every day of my life.
I walk around the city. I feel completely. So I do think that part of what we're doing is reminding people, look, the city is not this big, bad, scary place. Yes. There are pockets of it that are very dangerous, and there is a lot of crime. But, you know, it's particularly true in Baltimore, but it's also true of many, many cities. But there's such vibrancy and there's so much happening. And so we really want to point that out as well, because we want to encourage people to come back to the city for sure. But to that end, like, we did a story, actually Ron wrote it, on Ron Cassie, on squeegee kids. And again, it's a controversial subject, right? I mean, nobody likes to be hassled by squeegee kids. Every single time I would commute to work, you know, they would approach me. And, you know, right now, because we all have windshield wiper fluid in our windows, it's just not necessary, right? But what Ron did with this story is he hung out with them. He spoke to them. He let their voices come forward. And once you got to know these kids, you understood them more, right? They became less annoying because you had more empathy for them. And again, that's what great journalism does, right? It gives you empathy. It gives you context. I mean, one line in that particular story that I remember loving was, you know, we all just, this is an after school job for us. What are we going to do? Mow a lawn? There's no lawns to mow, you know? So this is what we do.
There's no snow to shovel.
That's a global warming. Right.
That's what my hustle was. Right. I delivered newspapers. Right. There's no newspapers. I shoveled snow, you know? I mean, I hustled baseball cards. That was my hustle. Exactly. Your hustle's the cello, and we're going to get to that.
Hey, Nestor, you actually segued into my next question for Max.
That's because we're Baltimore's best conversation. That's what we do here. We segue things.
We wear that proudly. But Nestor said, you know, there's no newspapers. We know that people are reading less and less of what I'll call traditional magazines. So my question for you is, you know, I look forward to my edition of Baltimore Magazine arriving U.S. Postal Service every month.
Thank you.
Talk to us a little bit about the business side. Am I a dinosaur? Do you all need to worry because Don Mower is an old white guy in the suburbs, and there ain't many of him that are looking forward to this every month? Is that an issue for you?
In a word, yes. The subscriptions have gone down, and it's a shame because the subscriptions are so cheap. Like, if you were to go to the supermarket and buy 3 issues of Baltimore Magazine a year in the supermarket, you may as well get a subscription because you're actually going to save money that way. And subscriptions are important for us, obviously, because they help us with advertising and the rest. But yes, I mean, the entire world has pivoted online, and I love magazines personally. I think there's nothing quite like the experience of holding a magazine.
But we've been doing it our whole lives, right?
Yeah, right. Flipping through a magazine.
Marking it with a little tab.
You can't replicate that experience online. I feel very strongly about that. And, you know, many of our subscribers would agree. But yes, the subscriptions are dwindling. What's exploding, as you can imagine, what's just blowing up is our online, BaltimoreMagazine.com. So, and you know, we love that as well. But in my heart is always going to belong to the print magazine. And if I could go back 25 years to the first person who decided that it was a great idea to put all the content up for free I would like to strangle that person, you know, because there is an expectation that what you pay for on the newsstand and pay for as a subscription, you can just get for free online. And
you
that
sound
is-
like a musician. Max, oh, that's Max, right. You're a musician too. Right. Exactly.
Max, that's such a great point. I want to say, time flies. It may have been 10 years ago now, and Bob Woodward was speaking at, I guess it was the Lyric, as part of a speaker series. And on that night, as part of the question and answer, somebody asked him about this. And it was when newspapers were really in the infancy
right.
of the digital age. And Woodward said, look, I'm not an editor. I don't pretend to know everything, but I will tell you that I had one of the frankest conversations I've ever had with our publisher recently when I said to him, I'm not sure I understand the business model if everything we put in print is going to be available for free. I'm just not sure. I know I'm not a businessman, but I'm not sure I understand that. Of course, papers evolved and they have paywalls. But what you're saying, look, has been part of that total revolution. Max, is the online version, and again, I'll plead guilty. I get it. It comes to my inbox email, but I don't really look at it because I've read this. Are they the same? Is the online version the same as the magazine I get at home?
Well, more or less. What we do is there's a delay. So the stories go up online generally about a month or so later. So if you want to get the story right away, you have to subscribe to the magazine or buy the magazine. But almost everything in the magazine goes online. Certain things don't. Table of contents, letters, you know, certain smaller stories don't always make it online, but a lot of them do. And then online, we have additional reporting as well. We kind of have more of like a daily, almost like a daily newspaper style reportage where we're covering, you know, not the breaking news per se, but the daily news that we think is of particular interest to our readers. So our dining coverage, you know, so yesterday we get a story up about the restaurants being closed, you know, like things that we know are important to our readers. And of course, online is where you can read a lot of my pop culture writing, because I do still love, I'm still a film critic. You can find me online as a film critic at Rotten Tomatoes as well as Baltimore.
I'm gonna do a little, you know, pluggage for you. You're the only person I really trust. Like, I would not, in the whole universe, I don't go to movies. Mueller knows this. My wife knows. I mean,
I don't understand it, Max. Who doesn't like movies?
I got things to do. You know what I hate, Max?
Who doesn't like movies?
Max, how many times have I called you in the last 20 years and said, give me a movie? Because, and it's maybe I've done that 5 or 6 times, and that's the only 5 or 6 times I've gone to movies. And I hate bad movies, right? Like, I just, and as a movie critic, and I've seen Siskel and Ebert. I mean, I wanted to be them when I loved movies when I was. I saw every movie in the 70s and the 80s. Then I just stopped. I cold turkey because I saw one too many Adam Sandler movies. Like, literally, like, I'm like, I was sitting with my kid watching something really stupid in Towson that I got the free passes, you know, from Light 102 or whatever in 1999. And I'm like, I'm done. Once I had done it 5 or 6 times and sat in a theater with rude people, overpriced stuff and an awful movie that I wanted to walk out of, I just had it. So, like, that's my story. But when I go to a movie, I will only go to a movie if you give it like 6 stars.
Let's pick up on that, Nestor. So Max, pick up on that pop culture, Max the Girl piece. What, for those of us who still do like movies,
how many movies have you seen, Max? 10,000?
Probably. It sounds.
Yeah, I mean, right? I mean, ask me how many concerts I've been to. Ask me how many sporting events I have attended. I mean, it would boggle your mind. It would be, yeah. It would be fat, tens of thousands. Like, right? So I would think I do that. You do movies. Right. What's your favorite movie? Like, give me a movie.
I don't really have a favorite.
Everyone says Shawshank Redemption, which I've never seen. Go ahead.
That's not my favorite at all. I really love The Graduate. That's a favorite of mine.
Never seen it. Go ahead.
One word for you. One word. Plastics. See, Max will know what that means. One word. Plastics.
I love.
I listen to Mrs. Robinson.
Have you ever seen that with a Bill Murray?
Which one?
Lost in Translation.
Another good one.
Love that one. I love Brokeback Mountain. Here's what I will tell you. This isn't just the three of us talking. I used to be a really huge Woody Allen fan, right? Like, he was extremely important to me, very formative in my development as a film critic and as, you know, what we call a cinephile.
I think Crimes and Misdemeanors is one of the finest films I've ever seen.
I love that movie. Absolutely love that movie. So back in the day, before all this controversy was swirling around about him and which sort of tainted his films to a certain extent for me, if somebody had asked me, what's your favorite film, I might have actually said Woody Allen's Manhattan. But it's impossible to go back now and watch Manhattan and not think about it. And I'm not even saying whether I believe he is guilty or not guilty.
Well, I can't watch The Cosby Show, right?
Oh, exactly. Well, exactly. The Cosby Show has been completely ruined. And it's, to some extent, Woody Allen films have been ruined, although, you know, of course, I still think he made some masterpieces, and now he's not really as good a filmmaker anymore, not even close. So he hasn't made a great film in well over a decade, and it's tainted. It's just like Kevin Spacey, you know, it's
right.
Sad that there are these people whose work we admired, and now we can't enjoy them as much because it's tainted. It doesn't mean that it can't still be good work and a good work of art, but it kind of hangs over it. So that was, I used to love Woody Allen's films. I don't mention it anymore. I love Wes Anderson. So like, I love The Royal Tenenbaums. I love that kind of thing. And I love the film, The Phantom Thread.
Moonlight Kingdom, right?
Moonlight Kingdom. See, right. Don gets it. Don
well, see, for me, Max, and we know each other a little bit. We run into each other over coffee and best of parties, which I'll get to in a minute. But, you know, for the beauty of you, for me and my relationship with you, is I can reach to you and say, give me a movie I'm going to like. You know what I mean? Like, not ones everybody like. Because, I love a good story that sucks me in, that's sort of realistic. So anything that's sort of Star Wars-y or weird like that, I have trouble suspending belief or disbelief. I had to do that with the Ravens, pretending that, you know, the team they put on the field last week was a, you know, real team. So, you know, when it comes to movies, like, I like to be all in on it, you know?
They gave it a pretty darn good effort against
the Seahawks. I don't want sports in this. I want life. I want to know about Vermont. I want to know what borough you grew up in. Come on.
I want to talk about sports.
No.
Max, what I've told Nestor, and we have gone back and forth and back and forth over movies, because as he knows, pre-pandemic, and we've adjusted our habits, I think it's safe to say there are others who went as often. There aren't a lot of folks who went more than my wife and I. I love being in the theater with the big screen, with my popcorn, with my Diet Coke, and just watching the previews and the whole thing. What I tried
to explain. He prefers to be on Broadway, by the way, too.
Yeah, well, I like that, too.
Yeah.
But what I explained to Nestor is that 2 hours in that theater, to me, if it's done well, just takes you to another place. It takes you to a place that you might not be able. What's the, and you'll think of it, what's the film, oh, geez, I can't think of it. Midnight in Paris, where they're having all the different experiences with Hemingway and all
the Woody Allen film.
Right. I mean, yeah. You know, and again, you know, it's funny you mentioned Allen. I felt it's really weird when you said that, Max, because you captured where I am. I felt the same way about Roman Polanski. When the stuff about Allen came out, I felt cheated. Because I'm like you, I thought, son of a gun, I probably used another word. I'm not going to be able, in good conscience, to watch film, you know, Hannah and Her Sisters, Annie Hall, Manhattan, the Bananas. These films, the early Allen stuff that I like and would like to revisit, I felt it was taken away from me because I thought, I'm
what was that first one that was like segmented, like in 69 or 70s, like a 5-part? It had like weird sexual themes. It was really, really, it was almost John Watersy out there early on.
Sleeper?
I'm going to Google it, Nessie. See, you guys got us on a Woody Allen thing. We didn't want to do this. See what film does? It takes us away, Max.
Well, let's shift it back.
I will say this. there's a lot of parallels between what's happening in the magazine world and what's happening in the world of cinema, which is to say, us old people, we love going to the movies. Like, for me, that immersive experience that you're describing, that the lights go down and the screen right. is giant, and also you're not distracted by your phone, you know, right. which is a huge problem for me, you know, like I like to have that 100% focus. I love popcorn, the whole thing. That's, you know, that was endangered already before the pandemic. Now it's even more in danger because, you know, people were already getting their popular culture on their laptops, on their phones, on their iPads. And now as more and more films are by necessity going directly to, you know, on demand, and people are seeing what used to be first run cinematic films, they're just coming to their computers now. It's going to be interesting to see if the movie theater industry can rebound and come back. And it makes me very, very sad. I mean, there will always be some movie theaters, but, you know, those some of those chain theaters are in real trouble right now.
Post-vaccine, I think that's a terrific point, Max. Actually, it's one of the points that I did want to talk to you about was the future of cinema, knowing how much you love it. And I think you've captured it very, very well. You know, my wife and I were talking post-vaccine world. I don't know if that's 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. You know, we certainly will return. The question becomes whether the Regals and the AMCs and all can survive in the Cinemarks during that time. Taking that same issue and looking at it in another angle, talk to us not only about the restaurants. You and I were chatting. Nestor was yelling at us before we came on. He hates it when you chat ahead of time. But you and I were chatting about the real, real sad decision, difficult decision that new mayor Brandon Scott had to make in shutting down restaurants. And I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit about it because I think you and I sort of came at it in the same way. It was like, boy, it was a courageous decision. It was a tough decision. It was probably the right decision for health and safety. But you, I, Nestor, we all have very good friends in the restaurant industry. And I think of the Evan Browns and the Cindy Wolfs and the Tony Foremans and the Lou Winecamps that we know, and even the Damie Hahns and those people that are, put it in perspective for us as someone who loves the city, writes about it, this where we are and the impact on the city with this latest shutdown.
Yeah, I mean, my heart breaks for the restaurateurs because they're losing their livelihood, but also their families in a way. I mean, when you run a restaurant, your staff, the people who work in the kitchen, the people who, the waiters, the host.
Yeah, you're a lifestyle magazine. They're a lifestyle industry, right? Yes. Literally.
I mean, this is your family. And so not only are you worried about your own livelihood and your own ability to, you know, pay your mortgage or whatever, you're worried about your staff and what's going to happen to them. And I just think that that's so terrible when you think about the pressure and the pain that restaurateurs must be going through. On the other hand, I do think Brandon Scott did the right thing because we're seeing this virus. Man, I saw a statistic the other day that was showing the single deadliest days over the last 100 years in this country. And four of the top 10 single deadliest days have been in the last few months. So we are in a historical time and you have to take decisive action. And I think Scott did that. I think it was very brave of him to do that right out of the gate, but it shows that he's protecting his citizens. But that doesn't mean that my heart doesn't bleed for these restaurateurs. And obviously what we need is the government to get off its butt and give some sort of relief fund. You know, the original money that they gave that not all businesses got, but some small businesses did, that's run out. That ran out a long time ago. We need more relief funding for these small businesses because what we want is to be able to have the economy come back to life once we're all able to go back out again. But if all these people have gone bankrupt or aren't able to reopen their restaurants, then we're never going to have a robust economy. So it's very
sad. No, I think you're right on point, and it will be unconscionable. It will be unconscionable if this Congress goes home for Christmas, for Christmas break, and is not able to reach some compromise that gets money in the hands of these small businessmen and women quickly and directly, because they are hanging by a thread. But can we shift? And I know we're coming up on the hour.
I looked the Woody Allen thing up too, so don't at me. I'm going to get to that. I've written it down.
I want to talk about this latest edition and encourage everyone again. If you don't have a subscription, you heard Max say, by the time you buy a couple of issues at the grocery store, it's cheaper to get the subscription. So
Correct. Go
get a subscription to Baltimore Magazine. It's a great magazine. Support the city. Support all the hardworking journalists down there.
Thank you.
This particular edition, give us a couple of the 50 reasons to love Baltimore that stood out. First of all, you all sit around in a room and put on a virtual whiteboard and say, all right, what do we love about the city? Is that how the issue comes about?
Yes. It's brainstorming. Back when we were in the office, we had an actual whiteboard that we used, but you're quite right. We do it with Google Docs over Zoom right now. And but just to give you a little bit of the background on this, it's been a tough several months for everybody. And to some extent, that's been reflected in the pages of the magazine. We did a huge story on the heroes and helpers of COVID. We did a huge story on the cover story on the racial reckoning that's happening all across this country. There've been a lot of heavy topics. We did a story about, bars and restaurants that were suffering so much because of the pandemic. So we really wanted something cheerful and fun. And that's when we came up with this idea of 50 Reasons to Love Baltimore. And what's remarkable to me is that this cover was designed by our creative director, Amanda White Isley, but with the assistance or in conjunction with Globe Poster Company, which is, the famous poster company at MICA. And we couldn't believe we had never collaborated with them on a cover before. So we were thrilled to have this cover with them. It's such a cheerful, fun, I think suitable for framing cover.
It's a great cover. So now take us into the room and the whiteboard, and Max puts her hand up and she gets called on because she's the editor-in-chief. We call her Chief Weiss. So they certainly call on her and she says, put these up on the whiteboard. What were a couple that you felt needed to be in the 50? Max Weiss list.
Okay, so Globe Poster is in fact 46 on the list. One thing I like about this list is that we do little blurbs, little write-ups, but some of them are just one line, and the one line is enough said.
Is this like a Baltimore test? Like, how many of these have I already done or would know about? And how I need to do them all, right? Because there are 50 things.
You will know them all.
They will all
ring true, right, Max?
Reasons to celebrate and reasons to, right, exactly. So Don was just
so like if you're saying
out.
Like 34th Street would be one of those things that you would love about Baltimore.
Mix it up a little bit, not do the most.
I'm trying to get into your meeting a little bit and like be the guy here. It's like, I know a little bit about Baltimore. I could probably be helpful. So I'm trying to throw some stuff out. I'm trying to figure out what the qualification would be.
Nestor, have you ever had a Coddy? CODDI. You ever had a Coddy?
No, but if I did, I would go to Atman's to get it because they have like the original ones probably, but I've never, it's not my jam. When I'm in those places, I get corned beef. I have my go-tos everywhere in the city. I went to Amici's the night Brandon closed the city down just to give him some love. And I get my meatball. I get what I get. You know what I mean? Yeah. We're all creatures of habit.
Totally.
I went online on social media on Wednesday night. And I'm like, all right, everybody in the city needs business. Let's go. Best dish, number one place. I need to eat for the next 2 months.
Nestor, here's a question for you. So Max, was there a need for a tissue around the room or around the Zoom when y'all were talking about Mo Gabba?
Yeah. I mean, we love Mo Gabba, but since this is a story about what makes Baltimore so remarkable, we also love what Mo Gabba said about Baltimore, about its citizens, about its sports teams. The fact that this kid was such a charmer, he had such a wonderful spirit, but that he was embraced by the city so much, embraced by the teams. I love seeing all those videos of when Mo would go visit the Orioles or go visit the Ravens, and they were all so tender around him. You know, he really brought out this sweet side in these very strong men. And just the fact that Baltimore loved this kid so much, to me, that reflects positively on the city, you know? So that was why we chose him. And, you know, yeah, we tried to mix it up so they weren't all like the most obvious things. You know, we threw in some obvious things, but like, you know, you mentioning Miracle on 34th Street, we didn't put that in there. We didn't mention Royal Farms.
That's 51. How about that?
Yeah. We didn't mention Royal Farms chicken, although, you know, stay tuned because you might be reading about that more in the future.
I'm telling you, it's the Harka Brothers sweet potato crumble that's melting here. I almost walked out on you guys halfway through just to put this back in the freezer because it's melting. Should I eat some?
I'll tell you what they did include, and being an East Side boy,
yeah,
I want to put some money down that you probably have done this in your lifetime. They listed Benji's Drive-In as one of the 50 reasons we need to be proud of Baltimore.
I can't talk about anything that happened to Benji's Drive-In.
You've been there, though, right?
I cannot neither confirm nor deny anything that ever happened to Benji's Drive-In.
The other great thing about this issue is that we want
I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark there. Does that mean anything?
Wow.
I didn't watch the movie. It was a drive-in.
Okay.
It was the 80s. So come on. I was, you know, I was a teenager, you know?
So you had a girl with you is what you're saying.
Come on, man. Every skate land. I mean, Baltimore is the greatest. I mean, you know, I mean, there's.
I hope you went back and eventually saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is one of the classic right. films of all time.
Well, you know,
I preferred the one with Harris, with Sean Connery. That was a great movie.
What?
The third one. Which one was it?
The third. I forget what it was called. The third one. Yeah.
Dad.
That was your favorite of the three. Number one is the best. Come on.
Max, come on. He doesn't go to the movies. Yeah. His opinion doesn't. It counts on a lot of things. It doesn't count on movies.
I can't believe we're out of time, and I didn't even talk to you about New York. I haven't talked to you about Vermont.
Wait a minute before you go, because they did highlight Nestor, and I was so glad to see it on the list, Max, because we've talked about it for almost 2 years now. You talked about why we need to be proud of the healthcare in Baltimore City. Talk a little bit about that and how it got on the list.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we do a top doctors issue every year, so we're extremely aware of what wonderful healthcare we have in the city. But I do think that as the nation and the world is having this health crisis, it's just remarkable how they're turning to the doctors in Maryland, at Hopkins, at U of Maryland, for vaccine therapies, to chart the virus, to understand the virus. And it's just, it really underscores what we all know, but we kind of take for granted almost, which is that we have literally some of the best healthcare in the entire world right in our own backyard. And, you know, you can just never underscore that enough, I feel.
Well, Max, I know Nestor's going to take us out of here, but before we do, again, for folks, get this edition, but more important, get this issue.
The December issue?
More importantly, Max, they've been listening. All those Baltimore Positive followers are now saying, daggone it, I need to get a subscription. How do they do that?
Okay, you need to go to BaltimoreMagazine.com, and I can even tell you the slash if I can find it. Hold, please. Okay. Here's how you can do it. bmag.co/giveagift. Okay. And that's a discounted rate.
There you go.
Thank you.
I love it. You know what? I got to go back to Woody Allen. I'm going to pull it up here so everybody can see what the page looks like. Is that all right? Just to show you that I'm actually doing the homework. Is that cool?
There you go.
Oh,
is that
man.
Good?
That's awesome.
It's right next to the tab where you can order the ice cream. So here are the movies. Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Afraid to Ask.
All
and
that.
This was really like Gene Wilder, Burt Reynolds. And the other one was Take the Money and Run.
Love that one.
Okay. I think, and I've seen those films, right? So, you know, don't pressure me so much. How many really great films have been made since the turn of the century? Not many. And I saw Titanic.
What are you talking about?
Hey, you know what, guys?
A lot of great films.
Why don't you guys have me back and we can talk about films, the Oscars.
No, I need to have you back more frequently, and I need to figure out the boroughs. I need to figure out your Vermont thing. You need to play the cello, and we need to like hang out and talk about like ice cream flavors and different stuff, important stuff.
Okay.
We will have you back.
Thank you.
Babe, listen, my hair is growing like Warren Beatty in shampoo, just a little bit, right?
The soul patch is really, that's something special.
That's a good description. The something special description.
Max, I almost ran for mayor, and he told me I would not be allowed to have a soul patch. And Brandon Scott had one when he won. You know what I mean? So, like, he told me I would not be allowed to have a soul patch. So
you ain't Brandon Scott.
I mean, thank God for that this morning. You know, it's fine. You know, I'm here running Baltimore Positive. He's shutting the city down. God bless him. Oh. We're all in it together. That's all I can say. Don Mohler is here, former Baltimore County executive, the chief of all chiefs, the editor-in-chief. That's what I wanted to be at the Baltimore Sun when I was a youngin'. She's at Baltimore Magazine. Go get the magazine. Hang out with Max. Follow her on Twitter. Run into her around town. Stay 6 feet away and give her the air elbow bump. Max, I hope to get you back on again soon, okay? Please don't be a stranger.
Thanks. It was a lot of fun.
And we appreciate you making us Baltimore's best conversation. I mean, it'll be better the next time because I'm going to learn about the boroughs in Vermont. And you're going to play the cello.
Okay.
What song will you play on the cello?
Anything you want. Little Bach.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah. Anything you want. You tell me, I'll play it. I can do Eleanor Rigby.
Coming next month, Max.
Oh, you know what? To honor John Lennon, I would love to do that. That would be great. Hey, all right, there you go. She is Max Weiss. He is Don Mohler. I am Nestor. This is Taharka Brothers Ice Cream. I would show it to you, but it has turned into a milkshake because we've had Max on a little while. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Order your ice cream and grab that B-Mag.